All right. Levels. Hello.
Hello. 1, 2, 3, 4. Click ye.
Yeah, I got you. I'm going to turn this just a little bit to the side so you're not
going popping.
Yeah. So, Diane, you were telling me how the convention went this weekend.
The highlight of this convention, first of all, was having it in Sitka.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was, it impressed a lot of people. There were over, I would have to say there were probably 50 to 100 people who'd never been here before.
Really?
Who were part of that convention. So I think that's a wonderful thing, to be able to see exactly what it is we're interested in building for Alaska. And the catamaran trip showed them the gray whales. You can't beat that.
Right. And at the end of all this, are you still our lone Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor, or did somebody else toss his hat into the ring at this convention?
Actually, there was someone from Nome who tossed her hat in the ring about a week or two ago.
Oh.
So we don't know how much, we haven't seen or heard any activity yet,
okay.
But who knows?
All right.
All I know is nothing like a spirited primary, if that's possible.
And did you get a chance to talk with Ethan Berkowitz and Hollis French about their...
and Bob Poe.
And Bob Poe.
I have spoken to all of them. Actually, I spoke to all of them prior to making this decision to run for lieutenant governor, and wanted to make sure that there was a rapport and that they were positive to the idea. And after that was established, I went ahead and filed to run. I think I can work with, we have a fine slate of candidates. I think this is what makes it the most exciting for Democrats this year, is a very fine group of candidates, capable candidates, and candidates, I think, who know how to work with one another and who know how to work across party lines. Very important.
All right. What's the difference between running for Congress and running for lieutenant governor?
There's similarities and there's major differences. Obviously, I think the major difference is in dealing with federal issues when you run for Congress, thinking more globally in terms of war issues or our relationships with other countries. I mean, you have some of that, especially in Alaska. But for a lieutenant governor and running on the statewide level for a state office, the rules are different. Simply, APOC rules are very different from federal election rules. That's a big difference. The other is the issues. I think they come down to more down-home kinds of things. A lot of subsistence discussion in another sense, you know, because that involves state-tribal relationship issues. The issues of education become more pronounced, I think. And then as well, the fact that lieutenant governor is a position that calls for the oversight of our election process. And that's a very important job, one I feel that's been ignored in the past couple of administrations.
It is the opportunity for the lieutenant governor to throw himself or herself into kind of the political fray of the citizen initiative. It seems
something
like
something I feel very strongly about. It's very important for democracy.
Yeah, but this Craig Campbell he made headlines back in March. He went to the lieutenant governor's conference and actually put forth a resolution about outer continental shelf drilling.
Interesting thing for a lieutenant governor to do. And then, of course, Mr. Campbell's not running. And I don't know that that has anything to do with it. It's just that I think you need to have more experience in governance on the local level in some form and some kind of heavy involvement with federal state issues before you really go after a position like this. Now, he was appointed, and I think he's a very fine man. With service to his country. But I think that someone like me with my background in community service can bring a lot more to the table representing Alaskans' interests and at the same time doing the very important jobs that the lieutenant governor position does call for. And that's the oversight of the initiative process, not just the protection of the state seal, which is also one of the duties, but the but the election process. And we are revamping. There has been an effort to look at it. It was initiated under Sean Parnell when he was lieutenant governor and before he became acting governor. And that examination of our election process could lead us into another direction because of switching from a different form of tabulation to a touchscreen and instead of optical scanning. And that's that can raise a lot of different security issues. I think it's very important for us to be on top of that, and I definitely want to be on top of that. I believe very strongly for a democracy that you have a very effective and secure tabulation system for voting.
Do you think that voters in rural Alaska are confident that their voices are being heard at the polls?
You know, Fran Ulmer, when she was lieutenant governor, brought us into the 21st century through the optical scanning system, and that made for some improvement. When we start talking about language qualifiers and things like this, then that muddies the waters for people who, because we know historically that's been used to eliminate people from voting, and that's obviously not good for democracy. And I think there is a certain amount of confidence in place, but it can improve. And we definitely need to improve it, especially as we move forward with the advancements in technology.
Diane, I know you've added an acting credit to your resume.
Well, actually, I've got a few acting credits, but that's not the focus of my life. But doing the Elizabeth Pradovich story and being able to get that out to a national audience through a film for PBS, For the Rights of All, Ending Jim Crow in Alaska, has been a dream of mine. And to see that come true, to happen to be the person who plays Elizabeth and to have people say, you look so much like her, was kind of a fluke. You know, I never saw myself as looking so much like her. It wasn't a thought, but then to have that response in performing her, I think is just a plus. It's a very important story for Alaska. All Alaskans should be proud of that story in the sense of we were the first to produce a bill of that kind, the Anti-Discrimination Bill of 1945, and that's something, and with the efforts of Ernest Greening and so many others, along with Elizabeth and Roy Pradovich and Frank Pradovich and these wonderful, amazing people who stepped forward in with their strong convictions to people and to their rights. That's something every Alaskan can take pride in.
I wonder how you even speak the words. I mean, every time I hear that speech and I think about the room, as a politician, you know, sometimes you get an unfriendly room.
Yeah, that happens every now and then.
And she had an unfriendly room, and how she, I don't know, summoned the strength to, you know, to make that incredible speech.
You bring up something that I have given so much thought to, and I'm really glad that you're thinking about that because of what it does take to stand up. And that's what was the attraction to me, to her, is to see someone who could stand up with all that emotion around a very difficult issue and then maintain the dignity to change opinion. And we could use a lot more of that in our leadership today instead of pointing out what's wrong with one another, what can we do together to improve a situation, no matter how we feel things are unjust or how strongly we feel about a situation one way or the other. Can we come together, have a real discussion on it, point out what is working and not working, and find solutions in the best interests of people? Why not do that? I mean, we are really at a point in time where we have to have leadership who can do this and not just find ways to separate into camps and throw arrows at one another.
I wonder if we could just talk a little bit about your background. Where do you come from now? Is it Chugiak, or do you?
I live in Chugiak, and I still have 9 dogs from my dog team. My son and I used to run dogs together.
But you have a southeast connection.
Yes,
right?
I do. I'm originally from Sitka, And my grandparents, Flora and James Williams, lived in the pink house when it was a pink house behind the Pioneers' home. And I lived with them for a time. I also attended Mount Edgecombe when it was an Indian boarding school. I grew up as well in, because I was put through a foster care system, in Ketchikan, Metlakatla, and Juneau as a child, as well as Prince of Wales, when I got to go out to Prince of Wales and live with my dad every now and then. So I've had a lot of good exposure, I think, in my upbringing to Southeast Alaska, to many of the issues, riding the ferry everywhere, flying bush planes in and out of places, growing up thinking sometimes that we didn't go places in cars, you went places in boats or airplanes. Mm-hmm. And have my connection to Southeast is very, very strong. I love to come back every year. And as a matter of fact, my son is coming up, and a lot of people know that he is a double amputee as a result of the Iraq War, and we'll both be in Sitka in 3 weeks from now.
All right. So
with his wife.
And is that a new wife?
Well, they were married 7 weeks before he was redeployed, and it was about 7 weeks into deployment that he was injured. And she has literally, in my mind, been a gift from God.
Right.
And I think when a mother-in-law can say that about her daughter-in-law, that's a great thing.
That is good. So there will be kind of a family reunion of sorts?
That's the plan to get. He's very anxious now for the first time since he was injured, and it's been 4.5 years, to come back to the home ground where he learned to subsist out at Dog Point Camp and the people. He shot his first deer here and was able to distribute that to elders, and those are very fond memories. So it's a big deal for him to come back. But it will be in a wheelchair.
All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And we'll see you in 3 weeks.
You betcha. Not to sound like that, Rebellis.